A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. So we officially now are a week in to the new year. Actually, a little bit more, I guess, right? And the provisions of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act have been in effect for a week. That means the $200 tax on suppressors, short-barreled firearms, and most any other weapons as well have all been zeroed out. Thought it'd be a good opportunity to talk with Knox Williams from the American Suppressor Association to get an idea about how the first week has gone, both in terms of the ATF's ability to process forms for these NFA items. We know that January 1st, for example, the ATF processed approximately 150,000 forms, many of which, probably the vast majority of which, actually had been sort of held on to, right, for a matter of days or weeks. People bought their suppressor, bought their SBR or SBS, and then just decided, you know what, I'm not going to bother taking possession right now. Let's just hold off until January 1st. We'll submit the paperwork, and that way I can save myself $200. Pretty impressive, honestly, that the ATF was able to process 150,000 of those forms in a day. So I'd like to think that they'd be able to handle the crunch, right? But then the other side of this is, what about the inventory? If there's a surge in sales, is there now a shortage of these items on store shelves? So let's talk about it again with Knox Williams from the American Suppressor Association. Take a look and listen. Knox, thanks very much for coming to the program. It's good to see you, sir. Happy New Year.
Cam, happy New Year to you as well.
And this is a little bit happier, I think, than most New Year's for gun owners. January 1st, the $200 tax on most NFA items disappeared. It's been zeroed out. And, you know, we saw, I think an NSSF reported, January 1st, ATF processed 150,000 e-forms, which is pretty incredible. I mean, obviously, there were a lot of folks who over the past couple of months, you know, decided to purchase a suppressor or maybe a short-barreled firearm, but held off on completing that sale until January 1 so they could save some money. And, I mean, honestly, it's pretty laudable that the ATF was able to process that many forms in a single day. What are you hearing now a week in about how the ATF has handled this surge in gun owners who are, again, buying NFA items maybe for the very first time in their lives?
Yeah, I mean, I think that all things considered, it's been going very well. So that 150,000 number, that includes all forms that were submitted. So that's manufacturers' forms, that's forms to SOT to SOT, that's form ones and form fours, kind of all of that stuff. So that's the number that they received holistically. Okay. I think of that, there were around 80 or so thousand form ones and form fours. That's what is considered a tax paid transfer, even though there's no longer a tax on SBR, suppressors, short-barreled shotguns, and AOWs. But yeah, man, for the first time in 91 years, this is the most exciting New Year's that we've had in this community. So we're very excited about it. And I think that the ATF deserves a tremendous amount of credit, for doing such a good job transitioning to that. Has it been perfect? Absolutely not. It's a new day for them. The demand is about 3 to 4x what it normally is for them. But to their credit, NFA Division Chief Stephen Albro has basically given blanket overtime to NFA examiners to say, hey, work as much and as long as hard as you want to be able to attack this and make sure that it is as smooth as possible. And I think over time, as that immediate surge dissipates, you're going to see that level off. The question in our industry is really, where is that new floor going to be?
Right. I mean, obviously, you'd expect it to be higher, right? I mean, there are a lot of incentives now for people to be able to purchase these NFA items. So, you know, again, in the first week of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act being in effect, what are you seeing on the retail side? I mean, I know that, you know, before January 1, you were cautioning, hey, listen, it might take some time for the ATF to process these forms. I also heard people say, you know, listen, inventory might be low for a little bit, too. Are you seeing any of that around the country?
So we're hearing from our manufacturers that, you know, they're basically as fast as they're making them, they're getting them out the door and into the distribution channel. So demand is certainly high. If you see a suppressor that you want, I would recommend go ahead and getting it. Again, with that effectively $200 off the top, it's a pretty good deal. To ATF's credit, again, you know, they're processing these things pretty quickly. We understand they have about a 50,000 form backlog, but they're processing somewhere between about 6 to 8,000 forms a day. So, you know, the likelihood of getting it back within around a week, assuming that your FBI background check does not hit a delayed status, which is something that's completely out of ATF's control.
Right.
That, you know, we got to take that up with the FBI, and we are actively working to try and address that issue systemically. But nonetheless, the forms are being processed pretty quick, and that's a major benefit to it. But yeah, you know, demand is high, supply is going to be low until this thing does level off. So if you see it and you want it, go ahead and get it.
Yeah. And I would say, particularly if you live in a blue state, I would not wait, right? Before we, I hit the record button here. We were talking about a bill that just got dropped in Virginia. Can you lean back for a second? I love the shirt that you're wearing there. This is the ASA version of the Virginia seal there. Sic Semper Tenentis. Is that what that says?
That's exactly what it says. We made this back in 2020 when we were fighting the suppressor bans in Virginia. We succeeded then. You know, the circumstances weren't great in 2020, but they're significantly worse now than they were then.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, Democrats have a supermajority in the House of Delegates. State Senate was not up for election last year, so it's still pretty narrow control there. But, you know, there's a whole wave of gun control bills coming. And I mean, I live in Virginia. We've got, you know, semi-auto bans on the way, permit to purchase legislation. I think gun rationing, they're going to try to raise the age to purchase. And they're taking aim, it sounds like, at suppressors as well, right?
They are. And this is the first bill that we've seen, but HB 207, introduced by Karen Keyes-Gamarra, seeks to impose a $500 tax on suppressors effective July 1st, 2026. It's just ridiculous. You know, I mean, this is no different than putting up a bill to impose a poll tax, right? You know, hey, let's add a $500 deterrent tax on a hearing protection device. The ignorance from these anti-gun legislators knows no bounds. And this is something that we are obviously going to fight tooth and nail.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't think Virginia is going to be the only state where we see legislation like this. And as you say, you know, this is so absurd. We are talking about an item that is lawfully possessed by millions of Americans, right? Rarely used in crime. The benefits, as you say, to a hearing, well-known. Last time you were on the program, I think we even talked about that New York Times story that talked about how the use of suppressors, particularly on indoor ranges, can help reduce the concussive effects of you know, gunfire, right, to our brains. Why on earth you would want to make it more expensive and harder for people to own these devices? Unless, again, you are just so anti-gun that you don't think anybody should be exercising their Second Amendment rights. That, to me, is the only possible reason why somebody would introduce a bill like this.
That's exactly what it is. You know, these people just don't like guns, period, end of story. And they want to do everything that they can to punish law-abiding gun owners. It is wild. It is ridiculous. It is tyrannical. You know, and I think that this is about as fitting as it gets.
Absolutely. You don't happen to have any of those for sale at the ASA store right now, do you? Because you need to bring those back in stock if you don't.
I think that they will be coming. So I'll let you know as soon as we have them, and I'll make sure that one gets to your door.
I certainly appreciate that. Listen, I know we'll be talking again very soon. And, you know, if you end up coming down to Richmond to testify, let me know. I'd love to do something with you in person. But Knox, thanks again for joining us on the program today. And I look forward to doing this again in the very near future.
Cam, thanks so much.
My thanks to Knox for joining us on the program. Looking forward to having him back again very, very soon. Let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a update on this case we talked about in North Carolina, where this beloved teacher, Zoe Welch, was murdered in her home. The man accused of her murder, a guy named Ryan Camacho, well-known to police, well-known to mental health authorities. He has approximately 20 arrests to his name. Had been declared incompetent to stand trial in December on charges of breaking and entering. Prosecutor asked the judge to involuntarily commit Mr. Camacho to a mental health facility. The judge declined to do so, releasing him instead to the streets. And just a short time later, he is accused again of breaking into Zoe Welsh's home. While Welsh is on the phone with 911 dispatchers, he attacks her, allegedly. By the time officers get there, she's got grievous wounds. She's taken to a local hospital, but she passes away. We've learned a lot more about Ryan Camacho in the days since this killing. We know that his mom had been granted guardianship of her adult son on multiple occasions, that he apparently has a lengthy, not just a lengthy criminal history, but a lengthy history of mental illness. And now one woman in Durham, North Carolina, whose home was broken into twice by Ryan Camacho, is speaking out about her experience in the criminal justice system. And again, it's not good. Michelle Pacek is her name. It was back in 2021 when Camacho broke into her home for the first time, and her brother had stopped by to check on her house, actually came face to face with him. Pacek said he just walked through the back door, took one look at my brother, and then darted out the other way. Camacho was armed with a knife at the time, thankfully did not assault Pacek's brother. He had apparently ransacked her home and started piling electronics and other valuables, getting ready to pack suitcases, actually, before he was, it looked like he was going to try to steal her car and then drive away. At that point, Camacho already had a violent criminal history, but he was able to plead down to misdemeanor charges. So, slap on the wrist. Pacek said, listen, she said, I told prosecutors, you do understand this man has a significant record, right? And they just said, what? So again, slap on the wrist for this particular break-in. Time goes on. He's racking up more criminal charges, goes to jail, mental health issues. And then just a couple of days after he was released from jail in 2024, Camacho showed up at her home again, breaking in by smashing a window with a rock. Pacek says he was also involved in other alleged break-ins in the neighborhood. But once again, was allowed to plead down to misdemeanor charges instead of facing felony charges. This is the second time he showed up and broke into this woman's home. And he apparently told police that he thought it was his own house. He said that's what he told his lawyer to tell the judge, according to Pacek. She said, I'm addressing the court. I said, look, many homeowners don't have to deal with this once in their lifespan of owning their home. I've now had to deal with it twice by the same man terrorizing me. I have no trust. And for good reason. Again, despite Camacho repeatedly showing up in court, he was consistently allowed and offered plea bargains and then allowed to take them. You know, there's a lot of talk from Governor Josh Stein and lawmakers about the need to bolster North Carolina's mental health system. I'm in full agreement with that. But also, again, there needs to be consequences for crimes. And, you know, as I said the first time we reported this story, if somebody's incompetent to stand trial for a serious violent offense because of their mental illness, then that to me tells me that they're a danger to themselves or others. They need to be institutionalized until a point comes when they are able to assist in their defense, or again, they have been successfully treated for that mental illness. Neither of those things happened in North Carolina with Ryan Camacho, and there were repeated opportunities to do so. This isn't a matter of him falling through the cracks. This is the system working the way it's supposed to in North Carolina, and Ms. Pacek should be incensed. Frankly, every North Carolinian should be pissed off at the state of the criminal justice system, the state of the mental health system. And the fact, frankly, that people like Josh Stein have been more interested in going after lawful gun owners than addressing these failures that have been ongoing for years. All right, on to today's armed citizen story. From Anderson, Indiana, where a home invasion ended with one suspect shot, three others in custody, according to police. Haven't said much about the details of this home invasion. It happened on Sunday afternoon. According to investigators, four suspects kicked in the rear door of the home, forced their way inside. One of the occupants of the home was able to get to a firearm, shot and wounded one of the intruders. That caused the other suspects to flee the scene. Anderson police later located and arrested three of those four suspects. The fourth was located when a local hospital notified officers that someone was being treated for a gunshot wound. The three suspects in custody have been charged with level one burglary. The arrested suspects include one adult and two juveniles, a 17-year-old male and a 14-year-old. The fourth suspect is expected to face similar charges as the investigation continues. Again, no word on whether or not this was a targeted home invasion, whether the suspects knew the victims. But the homeowner who shot the intruder not facing any charges because, again, they were acting in self-defense. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. A man who climbed up the outside of an apartment complex to rescue a woman from a blazing fire. This was in Dayton, Ohio. Tuesday night, this happened. Firefighters saw heavy smoke and fire coming from a third floor balcony window when they arrived on scene. But before they even got there, a bystander had rescued the woman who lives in that apartment, actually climbing up the outside of the apartment, getting to the balcony, helping to, first he actually helped her toss one of her cats down to people below, and then he helped take her down a floor to the second story balcony where she was safe from the fire. Unfortunately, two more of the cats, I believe that the woman owned, did perish in the blaze, but she was unharmed. There was another cat, I guess, who ran off after the fire. It is obviously sad when, you know, there's a loss of property, when there's a loss of beloved pets. But in this case, there was not a loss of human life because of the quick thinking and the fast action of this Good Samaritan. He's not been named. We don't know who he is. But this anonymous Spider-Man scaling the outside of this apartment complex to rescue that woman in need. We thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I do want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again on Monday. I believe we're going to be doing another Monday with Mark Walters from Armed American Radio. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com between now and then, keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And if you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. Great benefits at every tier of support, no matter which one you choose. And no matter which tier you choose, you will be supporting the independent journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. We certainly do appreciate that. Enjoy the rest of your week and have a great weekend, everybody. Until we talk again, be well, be safe, and be free.